You may already have guessed that today is the first Sunday of Advent. I don't know what might have tipped you off. The words on the bulletin, the candle over there, the big banners behind me, the just change in color scheme to purple here. And with the first Sunday of Advent, today is also the beginning of the church year. January 1st is fine and well, but as far as the calendar of the church is concerned, it is the 8th day of Christmas and nothing more. As this new church year begins, we've moved from Matthew's gospel in to Mark's, although the themes have not significantly changed. We begin Advent on similar notes to how we ended the year on Christ the King Sunday, an emphasis on the coming reign of Christ, the need to stay awake, to stay alert, stay ready, because, again, to quote 90s musician Sugar Free, if you stay ready, you don't gotta get ready. Unfortunately, much as I enjoy quoting 90s song lyrics from the pulpit, most of us do need to get ready. Each year in Advent, I see a lot of contrasts. Within the church, Advent is meant to be a season of penitence and even, once upon a time, a season of fasting, much like Lent, with which it shares a color scheme. Advent is meant to be a season of preparation for the coming of Christ, not only the memorial of Jesus' long ago birth, which did not even happen in December, but a celebration and preparation for the coming return of the risen Christ. Usually, though, when we come into December, we want to focus on the birth narratives of Luke and Matthew, on stories of shepherds and wise men coming from nearer or further to see the infant Jesus, led by angels who know what's going on and following a star firmly fixed in the sky over Bethlehem. But instead, we read texts like those we read today, being confronted by Isaiah with the tearing open of the heavens, the mountains quaking. We are confronted by Matthew with stars falling from the sky and the ignorance of angels. Instead of infant Jesus in a manger, we have the risen Christ coming in clouds with great power and glory. The text is urgent. In its demand, we keep awake, stay alert, keep watch. Demands we pay attention to signs around us, but it is careful about those signs. The first portion of the chapter lists a great many signs that we will want to pay attention to, but which we should let by. There will be wars. There will be persecution, omens and signs will be produced, but these are false signs proclaimed by false prophets. Jesus will not come with all of those, but will come down in clouds with great power and glory. To put it simply, when Jesus comes, it will be obvious. But before that time, we cannot know. The angels do not know. Jesus says that he himself does not know. It is understandable, then, our desire to hide from that anxiety-producing uncertainty behind what feels to me sometimes like semi-compulsory revelry each December. If Advent is a time for preparation, we will spend our time preparing in setting out lights and yard displays, in baking and baking and more baking, at least in our house. We will meld together the older Roman and Northern European celebrations with warming spices from South Asia as we cloak ourselves in artificial light to hide our genuine fears. It's as if we feel unable to prepare for the tearing open of the heavens, the quaking of the mountains and falling of stars, so instead we prepare for the next social event. And every year around this time, I feel like a crank. I know how you're hearing me right now. I know I sound like a Grinch. I don't want to. I enjoy the light displays. I have already gotten joy from the displays here around Romney and am looking forward to an evening driving through Hampshire Central Park. I am even wearing socks with reindeer on them. I do not object to celebrations and festivities. I enjoy lights and parties. But I am concerned about what purpose they are serving. I think about the distinction made in some traditions between idols and icons. We have talked a lot about idols in this church, about things we use to replace God. An icon is something that points us toward God. It can be a narrow distinction, and sometimes icons can become idols. But I think it's significant, too, in how I have come to think about hope. Hope is, see the big word up on the first candle, our theme for this Sunday, for First Advent each year. But it can be hard to define. I didn't coordinate this with Beverly this morning, but I thank her for playing O Come, Emmanuel as a prelude, because the nephew of one of the translators for that ancient hymn is William Sloane Coffin, a legendary Presbyterian pastor who said that hope criticizes what is. Hopelessness rationalizes it. Hope resists. Hopelessness adapts. Both of these distinctions come back to the question of just what are our preparations and our celebrations marking? If perhaps we feel the despair of Isaiah, the sense that God has become hidden, if perhaps we feel the despair of the psalmist that we are drinking tears in full measure, are we striving to use the festivities of the season to fill that hole? Or are we using them to remind ourselves of the promise of God? Are the lights that we set out in our windows, on our lawns, and in parks a temporary distraction from our hopelessness, or do they point to our hope in the coming of Christ, light of the world? Each year I have come to realize I come in to Advent with the fear that we are all merely distracting ourselves. But I usually end the season filled with the hope that our lights, our trees, our candles, whether wax or oil or battery, are illuminating a path, are illuminating the path on which we are walking to find and meet Christ in our world and all around us. Thanks be to God.